on the Midday 180.
Greg Cosell and Doug Matthews are on the show, plus Primary Complaint. The Midday 180 starts now.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
It's funny that Reed had the update he just had, because we're coming up the stairs here to the studio, and PK goes, how much of America do you think realizes the NHL returns tonight? Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Chad, who's singing the anthem for the Preds tomorrow night?
Maren Morris. No, I don't know.
Well, they could get a lot of people now because it's all taped at home.
It's going to be all virtual.
People playing acoustic guitar.
For all I know, it could be
home.
Martina McBride from Blackbird Studios.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, we definitely know that one.
Yeah, we've got an in there. No, I have no idea.
Well, we have an in with the anthem singer every night if you want through Withrow.
It's very, yes, your source for all things anthem singing when it comes to Bridgestone Arena. Can I put that on my Twitter bio?
Absolutely.
7-time newsbreaker of the anthem.
It's hard, though. Those Twitter bios are
during
short.
During the 2017 Stanley Cup final run, 7-time anthem singer breaker.
I'm going to have to look at what you're going to have to take out of your Twitter bio.
I'm going to have to take a lot out.
Friday night finals, chit-chat podcast.
Gonna have to take a lot out to fit that in.
Yeah.
Now, if Preds Anthem Insider, you got to lead with that.
Yes.
That's good.
It's actually a good name for a website. You can read about that at PredsAnthemInsider.com. I'm thinking about getting in the website business.
What's a domain cost?
Even more so than I am right now.
A domain costs about $99.
I'm registering that right now.
Preds.
Oh, you better get on there.
While you're at it,
he's going to charge you double.
Go ahead and register for the Sheriff of Scooptown.com as well.
I did that weeks ago.
Yeah, we should get to work on
Sheriff
some of these domains.
Paul, you should absolutely get Sheriff of Scooptown and have it redirect to paulkuharsky.com.
I'm going
to
send one text right now and find out who's doing the anthem tomorrow. Just because.
The Preds are going to start collecting phones over at Bridgestone.
So they're kind of talking
without
about
announcing,
like,
all right, everyone, take your phone out and put it on the table.
Are they having 400 people or not? Because I know, like, J. Martin Ramon gave away a pair of tickets, but they're talking about no fans, and then they're really advertising, like, and for when fans come in, which is a very vague, like, they don't know when fans come in.
Sooner rather than later,
it's
hopefully.
It's a very tough spot.
For them.
For them to market to a unknown date.
Nobody. And the commissioner is admitting they're, as a league, they'll lose billions.
And look, they've got to be looking very closely at the NBA, which is having all kinds of troubles outside of the bubble. Also, James Harden is fat.
That is a funny video of him in the warm-up line. I mean, just let it go. Your fitness go.
I mean, I love these whole – I don't love them, but the players have all of the power. But can we remember a guy with all of the power trying to force moves, doing so by
– getting fat.
Eating at the buffet. Well, the buffet doesn't exist anymore. So it's harder to get fat because you can't go to a buffet. But
the guy is doing
DoorDash in a big way.
You watch the video of him in the layup line and how fat he is, and then read the quote after the game where he just says – I love Houston, the fans, this city, but man, this team is sitting good enough. Just nothing I could do.
Did he mention the food?
What you could do is drop 30.
What's he doing?
He's going to Nymphas.
Other than
eating,
what's he doing in the game?
He's going to Papados, Papacitos?
I don't know.
Is he still the scoring leader?
All I saw from the game was the LeBron James three-pointer where he turned and celebrated with the bench before it even went in. That's the one thing I've seen from
the
game.
I saw the warm-up line. I saw still shots of the warm-up line.
I haven't watched the NBA yet.
His width. Hutton, you see a side shot of his width.
I saw him in the preseason.
Looks like a truck. Yeah, he's ginormous.
Yeah.
It's really something to behold. NBA stealing headlines for
non-basketball.
Yes, that's a great comparison. Looks like Lindell White at his first training camp. When Floyd Reese said.
Or half of Isaiah Wilson at his first.
When Floyd Reese said, that's my running back?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I
watched last night King of Staten Island.
With Pete Davidson?
I knew was going to be weird. I thought it was very weird. It was like so quirky. And then it plugged into the conventional, like, oh, here's the guy growing and learning and becoming normal.
A coming of age story. Dealing with his issues,
coming of age. I'm way out on tattoos generally, and that movie didn't do anything to change that. It made me more. I feel like I should make Simon watch it to show him why I'm anti-tattoo.
I really like Bill Burr, and he's very good in it as the firefighter that's hooking up with Marissa Tomei.
Interest.
Also,
I don't like
Marissa
Tomei as a mother. That's too soon. Too soon to cast her into the next generation.
Too soon?
Too soon.
You know how old Marissa Tomei is?
I don't care. She needs to be the love interest.
This is like the reverse. The sexism that takes place in Hollywood.
Right.
Paul's going the reverse end of it.
No.
How it's always the guy that's 60 and he's got the 32-year-old wife in the movies. You're saying it's too soon for Marissa Tomei to play a mom.
Yes. Too soon. She should still be like the girl that's with that gang of guys. She shouldn't be the mom.
Marissa Tomei is 56 years
old.
She doesn't look a day
She can play a grandma.
No, in certain circles. No. She played
Aunt May in the new Spider-Man movie.
I didn't like that either. I think these are all casting failures. I challenge Hollywood to cast Marissa Tomei in the role she was cast in 15 years ago. Continue.
Then who should play his mom? Dame Judi Dench?
Yes, that's better. A grandmotherly type. No, I don't care. Cast somebody else her age in that, but cast her young.
Yeah, my recollection of King of Staten Island was it was very not memorable to me.
They still had to give her a weird haircut to make her look old enough, I think. I didn't care for that cast.
She's 56 years old.
I mean, I like Marissa Tomei a great deal.
I think she's a great-looking 56-year-old, just like I think Liz Hsu looks terrific in Cobra Kai to be about that age.
I don't want them casted as like that. Sorry.
As a mother?
Yeah. Just as older. Cast them young. They will not be replaced.
Update, I'm still efforting the anthem singer for tomorrow night's.
Thank you.
Producer Arena.
Yeah, keep us posted on that. I also watched the Tiger Woods thing. I don't remember if I made it all the way through. It's very interesting. I don't want to. I know a lot of people haven't gotten there yet, so I don't want to spoil. But there's a moment in there where his life comes fully into focus, becomes all golf, and his escape from golf is erased, so to speak. And it's very, very telling. I encourage people to watch this.
I can't wait to see it.
So we can discuss.
So it's a two-part documentary, right? It's just part one and part two?
Yeah, and I don't know
when HBO
part
Max
two
only
out.
Has part one up right now. Yeah. I checked this morning to see if I could go back and watch it tonight, and they just have part one available.
Part two probably next week.
Marissa Tomei, Claire points out, was the mom in Lincoln Lawyer.
Wow.
Lincoln Lawyer's
pretty
old.
For all of your Lincoln Lawyer info, you go to Claire. That's not a film
Lincoln
I've seen.
Lincoln Lawyer, I watched
it. Oh, really? With McConaughey?
You would love it.
I've not seen
McConaughey.
It's a very
good movie.
Good.
We watched it
I love
recently.
McConaughey. I don't know why really I haven't good. Seen it. I just
you,
haven't.
You should look that up. It's out there. Very easy access.
Wasn't she also a mother and a stripper in The Wrestler? She was the stripper with Mickey Rourke
How is
in
she
The Wrestler.
A mom in these movies? We're talking about
but
movies
I believe
that
she was both.
Are 10 to 15 years old.
Very multi-talented.
She should not have been playing a mother at 40. Not that there aren't mothers who are 40, but not her. Are you following what I'm saying?
Well, no. She's 56.
Marissa Tomei, though, I think here's the confusing part.
She's so much younger.
Marissa Tomei,
she's 56.
She seems so much younger because her breakout role, where I believe she won an Oscar, was nominated, was as the very young girlfriend of a much older Joe Pesci in the movie, right? So it's like you eternally crystallize her as this very young person because of that role in the movie.
She towered over
him. I don't know what I
yeah,
do,
she did.
But I don't think she should be playing her to her age. Some people are eternally cast as a different age, and I think she should be in that pot of actors.
Now, Paul's saying, I think she's still extremely attractive, but the thought of a 56-year-old woman is not attractive to me. Therefore, she cannot
that.
Be cast as a 56-year-old woman.
I find plenty of 56-year-old women attractive. That's in my wheelhouse, if you will.
Other than Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei strikes me as more late 30s.
I'm trying to see, so she's 56, right, is what I said, 56.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see the breaking point when she went from love interest Like young love interest
to
mom.
What's the flip movie?
So Anger Management with Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson. She was the love interest of Adam Sandler.
Bad film, but I approve of the cast.
College buddies, grown up later, mm-hmm. and they eventually get together. I'm thinking it's The Wrestler, 2008. 2008 in The Wrestler. She definitely played, I guess, younger, but love interest of Mickey Rourke.
See, and that's like real time. But
that was more of the mom era. Now, then she goes to Crazy Stupid Love in 2011, where she's a single teacher. That's with Steve Carell when he's going through his divorce or
single
separation.
Single teacher. I approve of single teacher casting. I think that's more of an appropriate role. I just saying, you're on to something when you say all these guys are still love interests when they're friggin' 70.
Like Steve Carell, who's probably the same age and getting divorced and Marissa Tomei is his love interest in the film.
Well, hell, Clint Eastwood is still cast as a love interest. And what is he?
In Bridges of Madison County?
Yeah.
When is he a love interest?
Behind the camera.
I'm not familiar with this film. It's been a while since that's happened.
You get my point.
2017, Paul, Spider-Man Homecoming is when she morphed into Aunt May.
Yeah, she's standing.
That's where officially
she was that love interest in Hang 'Em High.
She's standing at the sink. That's what I pictured.
The original
movie.
Dirty Harry. He was a great love interest.
She's standing at that sink in that Spider-Man movie. Spider-Man. Anyway, I don't know if you should spend time on King of Staten Island.
Yeah, it was fine, and I like Bill Burr in it. I'm not a huge Pete Davidson guy.
He's so weird.
And Steve Buscemi's good.
Steve Buscemi was way muted in this. He played like a normal dude.
Yeah.
I wonder how hard that is for a guy who's as weird as Steve Buscemi.
I don't think Steve Buscemi's that weird. You know that he was actually a fireman? Weird. A firefighter? Fireman.
What?
Fire instead of fireman, yes. He was a firefighter in, I think, on Staten Island.
And I thought one thing, Pete Davidson's dad died.
Steve Buscemi's wife died recently,
at too. The Trade Towers on 9/11, which is a big, obviously dramatic thing. And then they kind of dumb it down for the movie and make it smaller. I thought that was an odd choice in the screenplay.
I think Judd Apatow's become less funny over the years. As he leans more into drama, everything becomes less funny. This is 40, I think, was the turning point.
I think that's
from
what he's
like. Laugh out loud. I thought he was going type for movies that though. To This is 40, which is much
you
more
think
dramatic.
That's his career path.
Yeah, I think he wanted to get more into serious than
what's the
former guest of the show?
Adam Sandler, Seth Rogen movie, Funny People.
Yeah,
that wasn't funny at all.
Right, right.
That's another
very
one that broke
deceptive
into drama.
Title.
Yes.
Very deceptive title. Try to pull you in for comedy and then hit you with seriousness.
Well, then he was the...
Judd Apatow's made some fantastic movies like you just listed.
Yeah, he produced and had a lot to do with Girls also.
Yes.
Not funny. Oh. I watched it. Not very funny. More drama, I would think. Dramedy.
And what was the Amy Schumer movie?
Trainwreck.
Also...
That was pretty funny. I actually kind of liked that one. John Cena in it. And Bill Hader was good as the... Straight-laced doctor.
I hate when somebody's as good as Judd Apatow was and his work drops off. I love
Judd Apatow, friend of the show, by the way.
Who sustain their work. You know, whether he transitions into something or not, if he transitions into something, I want the new brand of stuff to be as good as the old brand of stuff, and it hasn't been.
Well, Trainwreck was pretty good.
Trainwreck was good, but that's a long time ago.
Pretty much anything he puts his name on, people are flocking to, so... I'd say his career is going just fine.
Well, this movie is not that good, and I don't know how well it did, but you can't measure how well a movie does now.
Well, I mean, that's also true.
He also has been doing
He has a fairly high hit rate, though.
Yeah, and I think he talked about this in an interview with us, but he's also doing a lot of documentaries now, and the latest one he's working on is a George Carlin documentary.
Oh, okay.
He did the one, the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. He put all that together about his friend Gary Shandling after he died. But he's done King of Staten Island, and his next project is this untitled George Carlin documentary.
Have you watched the Clooney movie, by the way, Midnight Sky?
I'm 30 minutes from finishing it. I really just want to read how it ends.
Really?
I'm not a fan.
I found it somewhat compelling. It's kind of a castaway in the snow.
I think the best part of it is Kyle Chandler's small part. Coach Taylor.
They go to space. They go to space for like 20 minutes at one point where it's too far away from Clooney. You should put that on your list too, Hot.
What's the name of it?
Claire will like it.
Is Midnight, the girl
Midnight
real?
Sky?
Oh, yeah. She
spoiler
wants to see
alert.
That.
Is the girl?
Let's not spoil it. Until right.
That seems like
it.
A pretty big plot.
Apparently
not. The whole time I'm thinking, is this little girl real?
Apparently not. 615-737-1045, our number.
Well, that was my first thing. Like, this can't be real. This has to be a figment of the dying man's imagination.
Greg Cosell's coming up today. Also, Doug Matthews. A lot to chat about with both. Primary complaint a bit later.
I got a goodie.
What an opening segment, by the way. Let's give ourselves a hand.
Well, no, let's
really
keep it going.
Everywhere right there.
Phone lines available.
Let's be three guys sitting at a bar.
Marissa Tomei, Midnight Sky, King of Staten Island, Judd Apatow.
NHL.
National NHL starting, singers. National
We're
anthem
changing
singers,
your bio
which
on
as
Twitter.
Of 9:18 a.m.
Someone
I'm
with
still
the Preds.
Efforting.
There's someone in the Preds office who just threw their cell phone against the wall like, not another season of this.
They're making a phone call.
How dare, Chad?
Listen, this is very
much. Travis Scott. We need someone else. What's Morgan Wallen doing? What's Morgan Wallen doing?
This is so much three guys at a bar that during this break, I will be running across the street getting pictures of Old Fashioned.
Sweet. Let's do it.
I mean, let's finally do it.
Let's
talk about it. And
let's
we
get
never
wild and do some hard ciders.
Let's do it. Matter of fact, people should be tweeting us about the drinks they want to bring us. Let's go with
He's
that.
He's calling and tell us how good we are. 615-737-1045. How much did you like SportsPass?
Yeah. No, two.
Hey, call in and tell us where we got it right. 737-1045. Only what you love. Right. 737-1045.
And two-pronged tweets. How much you like us and what you can bring us to drink.
Oh, the old Sports Fest days. I'm going way back with
oh,
that
I know you
Fest
are.
Reference.
I
back
love
way
when Chad
back.
Used to do back the math. The, he had to count how many chairs there were and then what percentage of them were full and then multiply that by about 10.
Are you going back to the 9,000 year or the 14,000 year?
14.
How many school buses are we talking about?
I mean, do you feel
More
good about lying?
More people attended Sports Fest and attended an entire NCAA tournament weekend in Nashville.
Did you feel good about lying?
I didn't lie. I was asked to give an estimate. Yeah. I don't know, 7,000.
You lied.
You do what you got to do, Paul.
You needed to go to confession.
Paul, you do what you got to do in this business.
Oh, let's not be rad.
Yeah, they should bring a confessional into Sports Fest for you guys on your way out of there.
That sounded like a confession.
Read into you how you will, sir.
615-737-1045. Number midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. They'll be open at 1112 Southeast Nashville, Sylvan Park. Edley'sBBQ.com is where you can place your to-go order. You can also order delivery through Edley's, EdleysBBQ.com.
Brent McMahon on Twitter says, what the hell is this? I was expecting to hear Dan Patrick.
You never know.
Yeah. Tune
Stay
in to the 10 a.m. hour.
Yeah. Each break, something can happen. hashtag it's Kirby's fault.
You never know when
we had to put it to play.
You never know when you might hear from Dan Patrick. Might just fire into your ears at any point, like yesterday.
Potentially.
Another Beth Elaine, I think, sends a thing, and I remember seeing this. It was a Amy Schumer sit down that she did with Tina Fey and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Where they all talked about their last, for sake of using good language, their last attractive day. Like they were celebrating one of their last attractive day where they knew the switch flipped.
Yeah.
And they basically become the mom.
They went into a different demo.
Love
at that point.
Yeah. It is a fantastic skit / serious conversation about the fact that it operates that way.
Let's be honest. Amy Schumer's next attractive day will be her first attractive day. Let's not pretend that that's something that ever happened.
Paul, your
thoughts?
Yeah,
more likely to hear from Julia Louis-Dreyfus on that issue.
Well, I think she'd still play Love.
I'm being very very polite in saying that. Who was the other actress? Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
Tina Fey.
Yeah. More likely to hear from Tina Fey on that also.
One of these things is not like the other.
If you guys haven't seen this, you should check it out. It's on our timeline.
It's like when Paul talks about his last attractive date with me and Hutton. It's the same thing.
Right, yeah.
Listen, I've always said I'm attracted
to
low percentage of women.
But
those women are
very,
very high in index. Yep. And I've done well with that.
It's better to be that than just lukewarm with everyone. Like
right. I don't want that.
Just okay.
I know guys like
that. Yeah, whatever.
I know guys like that.
Phone lines are open, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. I watched the latest Peyton's Places with David Letterman as his guest. Highly recommend that, especially to you, Paul, who's a big Letterman guy.
Love him.
The part of the bit is David Letterman writes these things that would make football better, and they go to Ball State and have the Ball State football team practice them in front, and one of them is for one play a game, you put all 53 players on the field at once. So they've got 53 on 53 on the field. If you get two straight first downs running, you get to play with two footballs on the next one. So they're doing all these different plays. Really well done.
Terrific premise.
Peyton talking to David Letterman and reading some of the actual handwritten letters that Letterman sent Peyton Manning on air is fantastic.
It's a terrific premise.
It's the whole show is really well done. It's all 20-minute, 25-minute, you know, conversations. The latest one also, Hutton will like this, Peyton sits down with James Vanderbeek to talk about playing John Moxon. It's all about movie quarterbacks. So nice. He's in Hollywood, and he's talking with James Vanderbeek about getting ready to play John Moxon. And they look at film of movie quarterbacks over the years, and they rate them together.
Another great
Who looks
premise.
The most believable
I, by the way, speaking of the films, I watched All the Right Moves lately. And
really?
It was –
It's a good movie.
I had a pretty good recall of All the Right Moves. It
and
played
Pipe.
Out just as I recall. And I think it holds up over time. I think it's a timeless story.
They're going to remake it at some point. Just watch.
Speaking of Peyton Manning.
It's going to turn into a Netflix series.
We are efforting and will have some interviews with some Hall of Fame finalists in the coming days. As Tuesday is, for some reason, they've moved up the Hall of Fame voting. And I will be on Zoom all day Tuesday as we narrow the 15 to five and vote on the three extra candidates.
And we can officially say that we are efforting Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
We are efforting.
We're efforting all.
Mr. Pineapple chimes in. He goes a step further with Amy Schumer. He says Amy Schumer's next funny day will also be her first.
I think Amy Schumer in her, I haven't
funny.
Seen her lately. She's pretty funny.
I think
funny.
She's pretty funny.
Pretty funny.
I think, again, I will vouch for Trainwreck as a good, funny movie.
I mean, the whole, you guys know the origin of that. Apatow heard her on Stern and said, I can make a good movie out of her. And like approached her off of that. So she's like indebted to Stern in a huge way.
I don't know that. Has she done anything since that's been memorable at all? She did that thing with Goldie Hawn that I watched about 10 minutes.
She's got a Food Network TV show with her husband.
Claire's seen a little bit of that.
She like it?
Yeah. She finds it extremely funny because it's all filmed off of like cell phones.
Oh, yeah. They kind of, it was a post-COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. So everything's in their kitchen filming on cell phone.
Michael on Twitter says part two of the Tiger Doc will be released this Sunday night. Air live on HBO.
Is this the documentary that Feinstein was asked to do but chose not to?
But yeah. He said ultimately he chose to. He changed his mind. His wife got him to change his mind. I was looking
he
for
did
him.
He did it, but he
in.
Said that they probably won't include anything that he's in.
He's not been in, he's not been in it so far.
John Feinstein is strictly about if it's ever been done before,
he don't want to
can't do it again.
He's
there can't
it.
Be multiple documentaries about one subject.
Gary Smith is the primary
That encyclopedia is written. There is nothing to add.
I mean, if they had a 10-part Bobby Knight documentary, John Feinstein would argue Season on the Brink is the definitive Bobby Knight
right.
work,
it's
and
done.
Nothing could follow through.
What'd you say about Gary?
Gary
Which
Smith
I would agree, by the
from
way.
Sports Illustrated, who's fantastic, he's the primary journalist voice in what I've seen so far.
Who's the Gary Myers? What makes Gary Myers the expert on anything postseason related to old quarterbacks? He's now the go-to guy for Brady against Breeze this week because he wrote the Brady Manning book.
I think he's just studied and written and put himself out there.
He wrote that book. What a great just vacuum to put yourself in. Yeah. Like, I'm the quarterback guy.
Yeah, he's the old quarterback.
Bruce Feldman became that guy for college with coaches and quarterbacks when he wrote the book on a quarterback. I noticed every documentary piece would feature Bruce Feldman talking about quarterbacks.
Where have you seen him in a way that you feel like he's that guy?
I mean, this week they're playing, and everyone across the country that I follow in sports talk radio is having him on.
It's interesting.
Oh, I got my primary complaint last week?
Yeah, yeah.
Got a follow-up text without even responding. Shall I read it to you guys?
Yes.
Please do.
What did Christopher write you?
First, remind everyone your primary complaint.
So last week, this one's a little bit more coherent, at least. I read the whole text, but it was asking if we wanted guests that we didn't want, that we normally would be rotating around Radio Row, but we had to have an ex-soldier on with the guest. But also the assumption is you want these guests, so what times work for you?
But then there's
it was basically like, here it is,
presuming.
You must have them on.
But
what
then there's
time do you
another segment later that we had to have another guest on that he references towards the bottom of this text.
So here's the latest. I didn't respond to that text, okay? This was yesterday at 1:16. Hi, Chad. This week we have available Joe DeLaMalier, Hall of Fame Buffalo Bill, Bob Golic, ex-Brown defensive lineman, does Browns game pre-game radio show, Kendall Gammon, ex-Chief, did Chiefs radio network color for 10 years, Vincent Jackson, Tampa Bay Bucks wide receiver, Amon Green, Green Bay Packers running back. It's not bad, but here's the problem. Each guest has to have B.J. Gannum on as well.
Hard pass.
He's the captain of the Wounded Warrior Amputee Football Program. Great program. Fine mentioning the Wounded Warrior Amputee Program. Can't we just mention that with the guests that we're having on to talk football?
Yeah, I mean, his hit rate on this is going to be very low. Good
This is always my thing with
Dockett just doing this?
But it's always my thing on Radio Row. Like, it's like they bring them. All you have to do is give these guests they're bringing around are smart enough. If you give them a little note on what they're talking about, they can go to every interview and bring it up and talk about it. You don't have to bring someone with the organization on with them.
And we'll open the door. That's the deal at Radio Row.
How many times can you ask Golic about Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
You know?
College years.
So that list, A, the prime guests are unappealing.
That's every year at the
I wanted to make that distinction because it's inferior to the actual Saved by the Bell.
The prime guests are unappealing.
It's like saying Good Morning, Miss Bliss. Is equal to the actual series.
The prime guests are unappealing, and then having them with a sidecar is very unappealing.
Yeah.
Sidecar, I like that.
I'm just going to not reply and hope to get a weekly update on guests they have available.
I had a friend who was a big nicknamer, and I don't remember the circumstances, but we had a young lady out with us at, it's the place over by...
Gold Rush.
I'm not going to remember it. But anyway, she had a drink...
Cannery Ballroom.
Came with a sidecar, and he nicknamed her Sidecar. And for the entire night, we called her Sidecar. I wonder what became her. Sidecar, if you're out there listening, give us a call.
I had a buddy that insisted his nickname from high school was Headboard.
I can only imagine.
Big forehead or what?
No, that he gave no reason.
Oh, I know the reason. Oh. I'll tell you off air.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you off air.
Use your imagination.
Old Headboard Mason.
Headboard, if you're out there, give us a ring.
Paul, you know Chuck Pagano fairly well. He announced his retirement.
Yeah, I didn't get to know him that well because he was ill, and then Bruce Arians took over. A good man, for sure, and a good defensive
great
coordinator.
Guy.
Fell into a good quarterback situation and had some good years, and then it tailed off in an ugly thing with he and Gregson and Irsay. Well respected around the league, did good work in Baltimore, did good work in Chicago. And, you know, there's some real challenges popping up with losses of these coordinators, some good coordinators, Pagano, mm-hmm. Arthur Smith. Now, if he goes, Saleh, who looks like he's in line for the Jets, those are tough guys to replace. Man, some of Titans Twitter is so ridiculous. Like any recognizable name. Schottenheimer gets fired in Seattle where he did a poor job. And Titans Twitter's lining him up to replace Arthur Smith. Please, God, no. I mean, he couldn't make it work with Russell Wilson, and now you want him here. That'd be a very poor hire. I don't know how far outside Mike Vrabel's going to go for this hire. Also, he has to kind of wait until the job's open. I'm sure he's doing thinking about it. But until Arthur Smith is hot, you know, people are asking about the interviews. He's not doing any interviews. He doesn't have an opening. You know, he might be doing some chatting and some having some conversations, but it's not going so far as to have interviews until people are gone.
Two questions.
Could be moves on the staff in the next couple of days. If he's firing people or if somebody's retiring, which I think might be a good idea in one circumstance, those should come down in the next couple of days. Those would be the next moves for the Titans.
We discussed some hypotheticals coming up with Arthur Smith and what Vrabel would have to do if he leaves. We'll do that coming up. 615-737-1045. Number Greg Cosell at 1015. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Greg Cosell and Doug Matthews on today's show. So a friend of mine sent me a text last night. Tougher to replace Dean Pease or Arthur Smith?
Arthur Smith.
By a long shot?
I mean, look, there are only so many defensive things you call, right? It's a reactionary.
I don't know.
Look, they did poorly at it.
Did you expect the same level of drop-off from Dean
Pease? They failed at it.
Here's the answer to the question for me. By saying that, you're expecting the same level of drop-off from Arthur Smith to whoever the next offensive coordinator
is.
As you saw from Dean Pease to this defense.
I'm expecting him to do a better job replacing Arthur Smith than he did, quote-unquote, not replacing.
You do? Because yesterday you're saying Shane Bowen's going to be the defensive coordinator again next year.
How does that lend
anyone any confidence?
I'm not saying, look, he has to do a good job replacing Arthur Smith.
Okay, but the defense goes from pretty good, getting them to an AFC championship, being strong at the end of the year, to horrible. And that same head coach is going to bring back that same defensive coordinator? And you're telling me he's going to do a good job finding an offensive coordinator?
Well, he has to go somewhere and get one unless he promotes Downing. Let's finish answering
the
question.
By the way, the promotion has worked out pretty well last time with Arthur Smith. Yeah.
Let's finish answering the question. You seem to maybe disagree. The defensive coordinator, to me, is a reactionary thing. You're calling a set, putting personnel on the field, calling man zone, blitz, not blitz. It's a reactionary thing to what you see from the offense. The offense, you're dictating everything.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you could argue the offense is a reaction to the defense too.
Where do you put
what they're looking at?
The group of defensive talent.
Defensive talent on this team this year was terrible.
Okay, what did Dean Pease get out of that talent?
More, but he had
a lot more.
He had more talent with Casey, with Ryan.
No, hang on. With Casey, we were told they were getting rid of him a year early instead of a year late.
Yes.
And with Ryan, we're told he's super slow and sucked.
Agree. Well, those are things we were told. But now looking at it in hindsight, I think we would all agree last year's defensive roster was better than this year's defensive roster. I'm not making excuses. This year, everything defensively sucked. We had they had a Dory Jackson for the full year last year, and he played well coming on. Last year's defensive roster was better than this year's defensive roster. Everything they added this year sucked. The rookies weren't there. It was way worse.
Do you believe Dean Pease would have manufactured more pressure than this group?
No, it would have been better. It would have been better with Dean Pease, unquestionably.
I think it's easier to replace Arthur Smith because they have really good players on offense.
That's
my answer to the question.
I think that's a good answer, too. I wrote today, I think because the defensive coordinator thing was such an easy thing to debate and do whatever, that certain people skated. Anthony Midget, how do we think he did compared to Kerry Combs and Scott Booker? Not well. Vrabel fired Tyrone McKenzie and replaced him with his buddy Jim Haslett. How do we think he did? Jim Haslett felt like he was barely in the room when we talked to him on Zoom. Do we think he did well with Rashawn Evans? Absolutely not. I think Terrell Williams is pretty good. Tyre Tarte emerged. Simmons didn't turn into a pass rusher under his eye. He's also given garbage, like a third-year Matt Dickerson, who none of us can figure out why he's here. And they haven't gone out and found a replacement. But those position coaches, Shane Bowen continuing to coach the outside linebackers, I mean, he's got zero to work with. But did anybody get better up there? Landry had a good season, but did we see an emergence of a second move that we've been talking about? Bowen's offseason theme was less snaps for Landry, and Landry played as much as anybody on defense. So Bowen's big offensive theme didn't come to fruition. So how did the position coaches do on defense? Very, very poorly. And we skate right past them to the coordinator.
Well, we skate right past them for this reason. When the Tennessee Vols defense gets worse, who do we point the finger at first?
The head coach.
Yes.
When the offense sucks, who do you point to?
Especially when Jeremy Pruitt was the defensive coordinator and is seen as a guy who oversees defensive coordinator Derek Ansley. It's a Jeremy Pruitt problem.
It's certainly all levels. But in terms of who spends most time.
You keep wanting to deflect from the head coach to go after these position coaches.
Well, he hired them, so it's on
him. I'm sorry,
him.
But when the defensive line coach, or the defensive line is bad, I'm not quick to go, well, it's Jimmy Brumbaugh's fault. Now that he's gone, everything's going to get better, and Jeremy Pruitt's not to blame. It's Jeremy Pruitt's problem
when the
defensive line's not playing well.
Certainly. I first and foremost go to the player. Harold Landry's inability to have a second move is first and foremost on Harold Landry, but the guy who spends the most time with Harold Landry is
Terrell Williams. Paul, players don't decide to get worse and regress. There's a reason, and typically the reason is coaching.
Okay, so but the
how do those players that look good under Dean Pease suddenly look bad under new coaches? It's because of the coaches. It's not because those players decided I'm going to regress.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
It's not like they're old.
But there are multiple levels to it. So Vrabel's got to convey it to Bowen, and Bowen's got to convey it to Williams. But the guy who spends the most time, and we're using a bad example here, let's use Rashawn Evans, who continually doesn't get better and continually is making the same kind of errors. Jim Haslett is the guy who has the singular most effect on him. Now, Bowen and Vrabel, of course, too. But Rashawn Evans, not very accountable when he says, the officials are watching me all year because I threw a punch in the first game, which is a ridiculous thing to say. Now, Haslett is with him all the time. He's got to be part psychologist, part technician, all of that stuff. And all I'm saying is we haven't talked that much about Haslett. How do we think Haslett did it, that stuff? The evidence in terms of how Evans played is on that level, they certainly didn't do well. On the Bowen level, they certainly didn't do well. On the Vrabel level, they certainly didn't do well.
Look, I'm all for replacing Jim Haslett if that's one of the problems on this team. And I'm with you. I'm not going to completely say, well, the position coaches have nothing to do with it. But this defensive issue is twofold. John Robinson, it's Mike Vrabel. Yeah. John Robinson played his hand thinking they would be better off without Logan Ryan, didn't want to spend the money on him. Even if Logan Ryan was going to do a team-friendly deal for a year. Didn't want to do that.
And it wasn't that fair.
Jarrell Casey.
He just earned a three-year contract during the middle of the season with New York.
We said this the moment that
he's the leader of that.
The moment that they traded Jarrell Casey was, this team is worse right now until you replace him, until you go do something. It's what you do with clearing up Jarrell Casey that matters. Team was worse without Jarrell Casey. There's no way around it. That's a John Robinson issue. You
traded him for Clowney.
Yeah,
basically.
And then the signings and everything else was bad. But the defensive structure, it's all on Mike Vrabel. And I'm sorry, but coming in there and saying, well, I guess I apologize. I didn't know this was going to take on a life of its own.
He was asked about it throughout the entire offseason.
Your defense sucked.
Yeah.
And you were trying to be cute about it by not naming a DC, and it backfired.
Absolutely.
So it needs to be a little more than I guess I apologize to you guys.
Well, now we see what he does. Is he going to be one of these guys that is super loyal to everybody, or is he going to be one of these guys? He says, "I always do what's best for the team. What's best for the team? What's best for the team?" Well, look, he stuck with Keith Carter, and and these are changes people were calling for during the season, which is not going to happen. And Keith Carter turned out to get it done with his guys. That offensive line got it together. Arthur Smith was getting unreasonable calls for his head when Marcus Mariota was playing terribly. And Arthur Smith turned out to be a hell of a guy. He's now a candidate for all seven jobs in the NFL. But there's no feel that any of these things are on the upswing for the defense. So now we see loyalty versus what, in fact, is best for the team. And I would argue this again and again and again. He made it clear last year he wanted stuff from inside his circle. Anthony Midgett was from Houston. Jim Haslett was his defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. They need some outside influence and ideas here to help with, Dean Pease was his guy, but they need somebody that could scheme up pressure the way Dean Pease did. They need a different vibe, a different energy, and some different ideas. And Mike Vrabel shouldn't be scared of that. Mike Vrabel should be welcoming that. So we're about to find out where he is on that. Is he okay with the status quo and his boys, or does he say, you know what, I need something that we're lacking. I'm going to go find some new ingredients. And look, even if it's like somebody he was with at Ohio State for a year who went, you know, I don't know where, to the Pac-12 and is doing something there, you know, that is a slight bond. It's very rare to hire somebody you completely don't know. You're going to have friends recommending them and whatever.
Sure.
But he needs, I would argue, some kind of outside help.
Well, but one of his things whenever he makes hires is he wants someone he can trust, someone who's not constantly looking for that next job. He's worried about them focused on the here and now.
Well, I mean,
so you go with people that you know to ensure that.
Yes.
But he mentions that with his hires. He's not looking for guys who are, trying to hurdle.
And, I mean, so you find a young, good position coach who's looking to come in and do that for 5 years or whatever.
Or you promote from within.
If he happens to be great, well, promoting from within.
I'm okay promoting from within.
That rewards the loyalty. That rewards the loyalty.
Okay, but Matt Edwards is the assistant.
Just as a general rule, I'm okay promoting from within on a successful side of the ball.
Yeah, Matt Edwards is the assistant outside linebackers coach. If Shane Bowen's no longer the outside linebackers coach and Matt Edwards becomes the outside linebackers coach, are we excited about that? He's been involved in everything that went on with the outside linebackers.
But again, he's not as important as the defensive coordinator.
No, but
let's see what they do with defensive coordinator. If they go hire Jerod Mayo, then I'm excited about it.
First and foremost, it's time to streamline the communication that all the defensive players kept hinting at.
Yeah,
a problem.
How does that stay an issue forever? That's the problem on defense. None of these things improved. And listen, they had what? How many sacks did they have in Houston?
Four.
And then they had five in this game. Are they going to look at that and say we had 9 sacks in our last 2 games? Boy, yeah, we got better. We're trending well.
Of course they will.
That's a huge mistake. They cannot look at that and say, oh, we're on the upswing in sacks. You say, of course they will? That's a big problem.
Of course they will.
That's a big problem if they think
they're
going to
include those 9 sacks.
I don't know, Paul. We had 9 sacks in the last 2 games. You tell me if we improve.
I can't imagine he's going to say the word sacks. He does not say the word sacks. He talks about pressure.
He doesn't say the word sacks because there are none to point to.
He makes it like they are unimportant.
They talk about sacks in Pittsburgh, 54 of them this year.
Well, you know, we took Pittsburgh down to the last kick of the game.
We got people ready to talk about this also. 615-737-1045, and I'm sure we have Greg Cosell coming up in 15 minutes ready to talk about this.
Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue.